Hi everyone, and welcome to Sped Homeschool Conversations. We are glad that you have joined us tonight. This is July for us at Sped Homeschool is Sped Homeschool Awareness Month, and we want to be able to share our community stories, and that's what we do in our blogs as well as in our broadcasts in July. This is our second year doing this, and our guest tonight is Don Spence, who is a dear friend of mine, and we have been working together at Sped Homeschool since Sped Homeschool started in 2017, but we were even working together before that at the Texas Homeschool Coalition. So thanks, Don, for taking time out of your schedule and taking time to share your story tonight with us.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate being able to come on and talk with you and share our story.
So when we first met, I encouraged you, and now you encourage me. We love meeting for coffee. So we're thankful that you're joining us. If you are joining us, you can share your comments. If you're joining us live, either on Facebook, Periscope, or YouTube, you can put comments in the feed, and we'll add those up. And it looks like we have our first one there from Amy. Hi, Amy. She said, "Hey, ladies, you guys are awesome." Well, we think you are too.
Exactly. Hi, Amy.
And so feel free to do that. Join in the conversation. That's why we are live. That's why we don't tape this and then just put it out there. So definitely do that. And we also want to thank Knotgrass History for sponsoring this episode of Sped Homeschool Conversations. We will hear more from them about halfway through this broadcast. But just know that we are a nonprofit. We're 501c3, so we operate on donations and also sponsorships from our partners. And so we can't do paid advertising. That goes against being a nonprofit. But we just thank everyone who supports our efforts to try to make homeschooling a more viable option for parents. And this year, I think, is one of those years that there's a lot of parents that would really want homeschooling to be a viable option when they have a struggling learner. So, exactly. So, Don, as we kick off, I kind of want to start from the beginning of your story. And, well, why did you start considering homeschooling in the beginning? And was it something you always wanted to do, or was it something that crept up on you? And I know the title of our broadcast tonight is from special education teacher to special education homeschooler. So that kind of gives a little hint of what was going on before you started homeschooling.
Yeah, so I was a public school teacher for 10 years. I started out in the regular ed classroom. I taught fourth and second and third, and then just really have always wanted to teach children with special needs. So then I went in and taught PPCD for a year, and then I taught a program with children with autism. And during that time, I got right when I started doing special education, I got married and had my son, and then 2 years later, I had my twin daughters. So things in our home started changing very quickly.
Right.
I was never going to homeschool in the beginning. My kids were going to come to the school that I taught at. And I had had some weird kind of things happen with some homeschooling people that I had met along the way, and thought, it's just weird. Those people are just different. And I thought, no, I don't know that I could do that. And I was like, yeah, they eat all organic. You know, I have these preconceived notions of what homeschooling families look like and
right.
acted like. And, you know, it wasn't what I saw for our family. And then I had the girls and three kids under two going to, you know, we sat down and said, you know, of course, God was the provider of our family, but looking at putting our kids in a daycare situation and me going back to work, I would basically be paying to go to pay for the daycare.
Right.
And I'm like, why am I going to do that? And so we made the decision that I would stay home. And then My twin daughters, my first Lizzie started having a few medical issues, but hers resolved really quickly. And then Becca was having some more complex issues, and it was very apparent to me that God wanted me to be home with our kids. And so at that point, I wasn't really homeschooling, just doing the normal teaching that every parent does. But then it came to Matthew going to kindergarten, and it killed me. I literally cried. I don't know for how long after he started school. I was like, I want him home with me. And he did not have a good time at public school. There was a lot of bullying going on, and things that I was not happy about. And so, sorry.
That's okay.
So I was telling my husband, I was like, do we really want to bring him home? And he's like, let's just give it a chance. He was hesitant because he was a school teacher, and who are these school teachers that are pulling their kids out of public school? And how does that look, So he went to kindergarten, and then he decided, he went to first, and more things started happening. And I was already homeschooling the girls pre-K. I decided that pre-K year to we did units, so we had fun. We did a month of oceans and a month of farm animals and a month, and I just had so much fun with it. I was like, I really want him to come home with me. And so I went in and I talked to the principal, and he homeschools their his kids. So it's
Oh,
like
that
it
was like
was a
a
very easy
confirmation.
yeah so it was a very easy conversation. We ended up talking an hour about curriculum, so I was like, yeah, we're making the right decision. And so at that point, I knew that all three were going to be home with me. And we had gone to the THSC conference, and they have a program there called Special Buddies. And my girls went there, and they were taken such good care of. And the feeding program that Rebecca did, they had someone there that could do it. And so it was just like my husband said, okay. Like it just melted his heart to know that this community could support us in what we needed to do. So at that point, it was like he was full on. He was full engaged. He was totally with me. He's like, okay, let's do it. So at that point, I had all three of them, and we were on the
And you haven't looked back since then.
run. No, I mean, it's been. There's those days where you're like, it's like every homeschool parent has, I think. I think if you ever talk to a homeschool mom or dad and you go, have you ever had that one day? And they're like, yes.
Yes. I need to send them all back. Yes,
Yes.
and
But
definitely.
thankfully, those little moments are less than the big picture.
So other than your husband kind of questioning homeschooling, did you have any other resistance? Because I know a lot of some people in their homeschooling stories have other people in their lives who really questioned, is this the best thing for your student? And then if so, how did you handle that?
I was very blessed that my family was on board, because they knew I had gotten awards at teaching, and so I really had given my all to teaching. I really feel like that's what God had put me on this earth to do. I tried to go a couple other pathways, and they didn't work out because that's not what I was meant to do. And I mean, God used all those situations to get me where I was, but I was very blessed. Both of my parents tell me all the time that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing.
That's awesome. Love that
My
support.
only resistance is myself trying to be a perfectionist.
You know, and
I'm
the
a very
quotes that we have from you on our website are the most liked because you relate so well to so many homeschool moms who question their ability to homeschool, and it's just so real, and I love that you know, you share that.
Yes, because I'm very much a type A personality where I like to have all my ducks in a row, and I question, you know, am I doing this correctly? Am I doing this the right way? I mean, just a couple weekends ago, I went away with a planning weekend with some of my girlfriends that we all homeschool. I'm like, do you ever just wonder if you're doing this right? And they're like, yes, you know? So if you have those thoughts, it's because, you know, we want to make sure. I tell my kids all the time, I said, I'm going to do this right because I don't want you living with me for the rest of your life. You know, I want to prepare you to go out and have your future. So,
yeah, but I think there's something involved in that for you as well as them.
Yes. I have ulterior motives, but good ones. Mm-hmm. But I think any person who takes on a challenge such as homeschooling, especially if you have children with special needs, you will want to, you know, and that's where I kind of come back to our community with Sped Homeschool and other homeschooling moms that I know that have children with special needs, and talk with them and say, hey, do you feel this way? Because, you know, we all feel like we're going through this all by ourselves, but we're certainly not. We all have things that we can share. Mm-hmm. And part of sharing is, yeah, me too. And, you know, that's so reassuring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the great thing about our support groups and just being real and being in a safe place where you can be real. And I just want to put a plug in. We have our Tuesday night Mom's Night Out after this broadcast in a closed chat room. And you can find those links in our tribes or in our Facebook support group. But that's where we just talk about anything you bring to the table. And it can be heavy, it can be light, we're laughing, we're crying. But that's it's a supportive community, definitely, and that's what you need. You do need to know that you're not alone, and this isn't something you alone are struggling with, and that's great because, yeah, I love that.
That's one thing I would encourage new homeschooling families or ones that are considering it is choose carefully who you speak to. Because you will always find people who will take your dream of wanting to homeschool and tell you all the negatives about it. Mm. And there will be negatives. There's going to be positives. There's going to be both sides. Right. But make sure you have someone that's balanced who will encourage you but let you see both sides of it.
Right. It isn't just here's all the glorious things that happened in our homeschool, or this is how bad it is and why we went back to public school. And yeah, there's some sort of balance in there, but
yes,
there's a good and bad side of everything. So
exactly.
Yeah. So in the difference between being a public school teacher and a homeschool teacher, what are the biggest differences in teaching in those two different places? And the advantages and disadvantages that you've seen.
One thing I had to learn is to take the homeschool teacher out of my school. Homeschool, you know, I had to take the teacher in me that wanted everything to be a certain way. And so, you know, Susie Q is supposed to be reading by age whatever and say, okay, throw that out. And go, okay, what does homeschooling really look like? Because one of the things that I got frustrated about in the classroom is that I couldn't meet all my children's needs. I'd have 24, 25, 26 kids. One year I had a cluster of all the GT kids, and then they gave me all the cluster of all the special needs kids. And I mean, I had ones that were important. This was a fourth grade classroom. I had kids whose goals were like basically writing their alphabet to, you know, GT kids who were above doing eighth grade. So that was a very challenging year.
Yeah.
And it pretty much taught me that in a classroom, it is very hard to meet every child's need. And not only that, to get them to the point of mastery. You know, we give them tests, and then we're supposed to have time to go back and reteach and then make sure they get to mastery. That's just not realistic in a big classroom. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were given time during our day, and I really worked as hard as I could to get that to happen. Mm-hmm. But it just didn't, I left at the end of the day being frustrated a lot of the times, because I wanted the kids to be able to know all the things that I had wanted to teach them. And I wanted to do fun things with them, like do hands-on things. But there were times where we couldn't do that because we had to meet a quota for a test or, you know, things like that. So being at home kind of released that pressure. Allowed me to go, okay, so if it takes us 3 years to learn how to read, it's going to take us 3 years how to learn how to read. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to skip over reading because they don't get it to get to the next level. So it allowed me to sit back and say, okay, what do my kids know? Mm-hmm. How do I need to teach them best?
Right.
And it gave me time to get to know their strengths and their weaknesses, their talents.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I, you know, a lot of teachers get to sit down and work with their kids on that level.
Right.
So,
yeah. And so it's, sometimes it's just that they, you get maybe an aide that can help. But then as mm-hmm. a teacher, you're just kind of orchestrating as much as you can and trying to appease the administration while trying to take care of the kids, and there's just too much going on to really make it
exactly
all work.
Now, so, when I go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, so the, you know, as far as in your home, do you feel like more satisfied as a teacher? You've got to.
Yes, and I can like I'm getting ready right now for the next school year, mm-hmm. and I can look at each of my kids and I can incorporate videos and art and the things that I know that my kids need.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I teach all of them together because no matter what their level is, I want everybody to be involved. Nobody has to be left out because I can accommodate or modify so everybody gets to participate. And that's so huge.
So as far as, I wanted to touch a little bit on curriculum because you are like the curriculum and printout queen on modifying curriculum. So if you ever want to modify curriculum, you need to talk to Dawn because she just has this knack with how to make it work for your child. But are there some favorites that you have to share about where you like to go and what resources you like to use?
So I started thinking about that the other day. Any place that uses games, especially like neurodevelopmental things where you're using games to tap into specific goals or things that you want your kids to learn, because I think that can bridge some gaps.
Yeah.
Because kids, you know, are thinking, oh, I'm playing a game. You know, I'm not really sitting and learning, but they are learning.
Right.
For my daughter who has intellectually disabled or disability, whatever you say, that doesn't define her, of course. I'm big about thinking that one of my goals and things when I taught public school is all children can learn. And I still believe that to this day. And so even though she has a label, it doesn't define who she is. It doesn't define how she can learn. It's just a hurdle we get to work with. And neurodevelopmental learning to me has bridged so many gaps because you're working with your auditory. So like of Use Little Giant Steps, Equipping Minds, Diana Craft, all those. And I am a eclectic person, so I don't just use one person's thing. I like to grab good stuff from all different places and put it together and kind of make it so that it fits, you know, fits the way that I think that my child needs to learn. And that's really helped, because thinking that one thing is going to work,
right,
even if it's good, because all the programs on their own standalone are awesome. Mm-hmm. But if your child can't just do that program by itself, it's okay.
Yeah.
But you can use those things to help build your child up.
Yeah. Yeah. I think as you talk to more homeschoolers who have homeschooled a longer period of time, you'll find that they become more eclectic. It's when you first get started, it's nice to have that safety net of one curriculum that has a plan and all of that. But over time, as you get more comfortable and you find little things that you want to add in, it's okay to let go of that master curriculum over time too. And so, yeah, that's some really good advice of how to do that. And I love all the names you Little Giant Steps and Diane Craft and Equipping Minds. Those are all partners with Sped Homeschool. We just love all of those companies. And just some of the unique approaches they have to learning in very creative ways. Because a lot of times our kids learn with the more creative approaches versus the more classroom structure type methodical methods that a lot of curriculum is made for the classroom, because it's easier to teach in that classroom environment. But as a homeschooler, you have, of course, that ability to be more creative. But I also want to point out that if you search our website for Dawn Spence, just search her name on spedhomeschool.com, you'll find all of her articles that she's written over the years, that like how to use a light board in homeschooling, or how to, you know, build a program. You talked about like before Math UC and how to get using touch math and
exactly, how to combine things.
Yeah, a lot of really creative teaching methods. So definitely look up her articles there.
I add a lot of hands-on, like we do My Father's World for history, and I can say now that I do not follow the TE to the letter like I did when I started. I'm like at the beginning, I was like, oh, I have to read this book and I have to do this, and I'm like, yeah, we're gonna do a lap book, or we're gonna. When we get to castles, we're going to build a castle. We're going to have a sword fight when we talk about knights. And so just learning like how to engage your learners. And the best thing is that you have your house. You can build a Lego castle. You can take that time, and you didn't do it. You didn't finish it, you know, during the school time. You can do it at night, you know. So there's all those things that you can do to enhance your learning.
And it does. It extends beyond the school day if your kids are really interested. You'll find them doing school every hour of the day if they are really engaged, which is so fun.
And cooking things that go along with what you're learning is fun too. We tried a lot of Japanese food a couple years ago. My kids were not so thrilled with it, but you know, how many times would you be able to do that? We studied about China. We went to Chinatown. And it was a very interesting restaurant with lots of things that you probably would have never exposed to before, but it was cool. Field trips are a big part that I feel like is so much better at home as well.
Right, because you don't have that huge group of kids. You get much more of an intimate experience when you only have a couple children, you know, that you're bringing places versus what you usually see, like 30 to 60 kids come out of a bus and trying to accommodate them. It's like taking the classroom with you. It's really difficult to engage.
Those were stressful days as a teacher. You don't want to lose any children.
That's probably what you're more worried about than actually teaching them at that point.
Did I get everybody back on the bus?
Right. Oh, that's funny. So I was going to dive into some of your greatest lessons that you've learned while homeschooling your kids?
Perfection goes out the door.
That's a
you can't
good lesson. You know,
when my kids were younger, I'm like, how do I keep my house clean and cook dinner and homeschool and do this and that? And I talked to, you know, women that I admired, older moms who had been homeschooling longer, and they're like, you just don't. I mean, you're going to have to pick and choose. And when your kids get older, then they can, that can be part of their schooling, is they're helping out in the kitchen and stuff. And so, because I'm a bit of a perfectionist, and so that was really hard for me. Like, I wanted to do it all. I wanted it all to be all my little plates and all my everything in a row. And you just have to learn that you don't have that when you go to a regular job. Like, you have days that are good, you have days that are bad. So why would it be any different home?
Right. That is a very good point. Yeah. It's just some days that you're not going to get everything done on your list. And, you know, I think it's a surprising day that you ever do get everything done on your list. Especially when your kids are younger. Yeah.
You're like, go to bed right now. So, because everything's good, just go to bed now.
Right. Nobody ruined this day. And then we go back to those days that we were talking about earlier about when you just want to send them all back to public school. Call it quits. So,
and it's usually when we've gotten into the higher math, lots of tears sometimes. But I was telling my, you know, I was telling my daughter who struggles in math sometimes that at least I can sit down with her. And coming from my background of having a learning disability and not finding out till I was in college, I struggled. And now I can say, okay, it's hard, but at least I'm sitting with you. And I'm not saying that it doesn't get heated sometimes, because it does, because learning disabilities cause frustration.
Right, they do.
I mean, that's just the reality of it. And out of frustration comes anger, because we're angry because we get frustrated. And so just taking the time as a homeschool mom to go and research and find different ways to teach the same thing in a different way that meets your child's need. The awesome thing is you don't have to go on to the next lesson tomorrow. You can stay where you are. Everybody, well, my child is behind. Says who? I mean, there's no behind. I mean, we school year round because I want them to get all their math lessons in.
Right.
Because math does build. Like, you don't just do 10 chapters and then you have a summer and then you move on to the next year. I like that we can complete things and get all of it in so that all the layering is there, and that's going to help them in the future.
Right. That year-round schooling is something that a lot of people who teach struggling learners opt for. And maybe when we come back from our break, you can talk a little bit more about that and how that kind of just eases the schedule and maybe some other options that it allows you to build into your year and how you do that and handle summers and, you know, convince your kids that this is something they need to do. So... All right, well, we're going to take a break and hear from our sponsor, and I'm going to let Dawn take a little breather, and we'll have her back in just a minute or so. But we want to thank Knotgrass History for sponsoring this episode of Sped Homeschool Conversations. Knotgrass History wants you to know that their curriculum gives parents a flexible set of tools that you can adjust to meet the needs of each student in your family. They use a readable typeface in their books to make reading easier for students and parents. So that's always good too. A lot of times when our children have learning difficulties, we do as well. Just like Dawn was talking about, hundreds of full color photographs and illustrations provide a rich experience for visual learners. All of their courses include hands-on activities and for students who like to write, draw, build, and create. Marilyn from Pennsylvania said this about Knotgrass history curriculum. It's a delight to see my son retain and enjoy history, especially as he is learning disabilities, and it makes it difficult to retain information just using a regular curriculum. Your curriculum is one of our victories. You can try Knotgrass History for free. Yes, you've heard that right. And see how it works for your family by visiting knotgrass.com. And yes, that's something we recommend that you do, is try different curriculums. There's so many that have free things that you can use. And so so definitely try out their stuff. They've got it right on their website, and you can pull from that. But thank you, Knotgrass, for sponsoring this episode. We are so excited to have you as a partner, and just to be able to share your curriculum with our community. So we'll have Dawn back, and so Dawn, that also brings up something, you know, you were talking about earlier as well, is just your own learning difficulties, and how that has really helped you to help your children. And I think a lot of times as parents we say, oh man, here's all the things that are wrong with me. I'm gonna really mess up my child if I'm supposed to teach them and I don't do well. I mean, I've seen parents who, you know, they say, I struggle in math, so how can I teach my child math? And you know, we put up these barriers of, well, I can't do this, and so therefore I can't homeschool. And do you have any advice for them?
It was interesting when I taught, when I started out my first year of teaching public school, I was very honest with the principal that I had a learning disability when it came to math. And so that first year, she partnered me up with someone, and he taught the math, and I taught English. And I thought, yay, I skated right out of that. I don't know how to do this. And then the next year, she was like, I really want you to take your own class on and keep them. And you do the math. And I was like, what? You know, and what I learned is, as I sat with my students and I had to learn how to break it down for them, I learned how to do math better. I became a better math student. I understood, like, when I went into a store and something was 50% off, I'm like, I actually understand how to do this now. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, my son is getting older and he's about to start pre-algebra. And so just finding ways, hands-on ways to teach him how to do things, and going back and learning, like, how to do decimals and stuff. I mean, who can keep all this stuff in their brain? Not anybody. But when you sit down and you have the teacher guide, and I use Matthew C, and they're very helpful in how they teach, teach you how to be that teacher. And, you know, if I don't understand it, I'll go find another video or look at something. So, you know, we teach our kids how to go to the bathroom and how go to the potty and how to brush your teeth and how to sit down and eat with utensils. I mean, we teach our kids from the time that they're born. We teach them how to go to sleep, when it's time to go to bed. So to say that you couldn't teach your kid, I think you're selling yourself short. There's so many things that you can do for your child. And the best thing is, you're vested in it. I mean, you want to see your child succeed. And so where, even though when I was a school teacher, I would call them my kids, and I was vested with them.
Yeah.
But it's much different now that it's with mine. And, you know, I spend time getting prepared for the next year so that we can be successful. And when a lesson doesn't go right, well, you know what? That happens in public school too. You start to do a lesson and it's a total flop, and then you have to regroup, and that's reality. We all have to do that. So I just encourage parents that, you know, if their heart is for this, they can do it. And even if they're teetering on it, do a little bit this summer. Just, you know, sit down and find a subject that you want to teach your child about and just kind of play around with it. You know, I mean, now is a great time, especially when we're all so much of us are at home already. Mm-hmm. Play games, do things. Teach your kid how to play a new game. I mean, that's teaching.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We forget that. We think that we have to have a curriculum and or a specific book, but that is so true. Is that we teach our children every day, and a lot of it is our attitude too, and just mm-hmm. how we approach that. But I have loved that about homeschooling, is that I'm always learning. The subjects I think I hated the most, I love teaching mm-hmm. the most, because all of a sudden I grasped what I was supposed to be getting, but the textbooks just really never gave me the love for it until my kids got really engaged with it, and I did too. So, yeah, it's fun. I can't say I'm a good writer yet, but little by little.
I can say for the first time that I understand history because we went from all the way from creation to the Greeks to the Romans.
Right.
We went all the way. Last year we did from expiration to the 1850s, and now we're doing 1850s to modern.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a time, like, you know, if you just throw out Napoleon Bonaparte, I don't know who he is. But now, because I've studied the timeline, I understand the confines of where these people fit into history.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the other thing, is that you know everything that your child is learning. So you have those teachable moments during the day where you're like, oh yeah, I remember when we studied about such and such, and you can bring that into, you know, we watched Liberty Kids this year because it had to deal with what mm-hmm. we were learning. And like right now, learning about the American Revolution and the early founding fathers, we've had a lot of discussions about that right now with the way the world's going. So, you know, those things just play into your normal life when you homeschool, and a lot that I get to sit down with my kids and we can discuss those things.
Right. You have them on the top of your head. So when daily events come up, you can automatically ingrain them. It's not like you pick up the notes that a teacher sent home and you kind of understand what they went through, but you really don't. And yeah, you just can't integrate it as easily as if you've been living it with them, and then you can just add in whatever's going on in the world and your life. And it's fun how the dinner table turns into an extended time of school when when dad gets involved and you're still talking school. My daughter is always talking about, you know, whatever she learned in history or physics and explaining that to everybody at the table. So yeah, it's fun. Definitely. So I totally forgot what we were going to talk about after we came back. I'm completely blanked on that, but I'll think about it at some point. But the one thing you shared about was, you know, as people are looking and thinking about, you know, with the COVID-19 restrictions and all of that that's happening, you know, just to try out some things for school. And but I thought we'd maybe go a step further as far as, you know, if they have a student that struggles, and I know, you know, you have a husband who teaches in the public schools, and what the schools are preparing for as far as, you know, how school might look next year. And I understand across the country and school districts it's going to be different, but especially for students who have learning disabilities and all the restrictions that we're looking at possibly happening, what are some of the greatest advantages that you see that parents have if they have the ability to stay home and homeschool?
I think I was actually talking to my daughter's OT the other day, is that just right now, with them not having any kind of summer school type thing, is helping their child not to regress. So starting now and like building on some of those things that they know that they were working on, because I know that that's the biggest thing that I saw with my kiddos that I work with. We offered extended year school year, it was called ESYS when I was teaching. And the kids went year round because they knew if they stopped, they would forget some of their learning. And
Right. Yeah.
So finding just right now, like if they're able to and they're able to be home with them, is working with them just to some of their basics to keep them in structure is such a big part of a special ed classroom. And I actually, that's one thing that I do keep with my kids is a lot of people go, oh, we just homeschool whenever we just, my kids don't thrive in that kind of environment. And it's great if yours do, but mine don't. Like mine need to know, okay, we're going to school at 8, we're going to eat lunch at noon, and then we'll be finished. And we sit and do group work, and then we have individual work. And but you have to find the rhythm that works for your homeschool.
So
but I would encourage you to, you know, reach out to the teachers, you know, that you your child had this year and find out what they were working on and see if you can start working on some of those strategies and things at home. And if they were working on numbers, get a deck of cards. That's an easy way to just like a, you know, Equipping Minds shows a lot of great games on her website, and it's for they're free and it has all the rules. And like we were doing it today, 5-on-5, 6-on-6, 7-on-7, and just playing those games. And tic-tac-toe is a great strategy. You know, checkers are great strategies. Connect Four, using those games where you're teaching your kids, okay, so what do you think you should do next? So getting them to use
sequencing types of things.
Puzzles are a great thing to do right now, or reading books, just sitting and reading books, finding out what you're, my daughter loves Abraham Lincoln. Like he is her man. Like she doesn't want to talk about any other president, but Abraham Lincoln. So we pick up books and we read about Abraham Lincoln because that's what she's interested in. But she's learning, you know, she learns a lot about life and different things through that.
It's the simple things, and we want to make it so complicated, but that is, it's so easy, and it's stuff that you have already around your house or easily accessible. I know libraries are letting you just check out things online and pick them up, and so, you know, those are just some simple free ways to start and catch up, and just that idea that learning is still happening and can still happen in this time period in between school and whatever you were doing in the spring to whatever you're going to do in the fall.
Exactly.
So, yeah. I do remember the question that we were going to talk about. It was year-round schooling. You mentioned that, and I had to write it down so I didn't forget it again. But the whole concept of year-round schooling is something that a lot of parents in our community do that maybe what we call the typical homeschoolers don't do as often. And I'd love for you to talk about the advantages of that and how you've made that work in your home. And then I know from experience that you do change your schedule a bit in the summer, but you still do schooling. So if you can, you know, kind of explain that a little bit too.
Well, we try to follow a lot of my husband's schedule, like start school when he starts and try to finish our majority of our curriculum when he gets out, so that we take all of the vacations and things with him. That's important for us because, you know, we need to do that when he is at home. So in the summer, I typically say, we're going to finish math so that we're ready for the next year. And math is one of those subjects, if you just lay it down, even over a weekend, you can see with your kids, it's like, what? How do you do that again? You know, and so continuing that, and then reading. Reading is another one that we do all summer long. And whether it's something a free read they want to do, or it's finishing up a novel we started in the year. And then with my daughter Rebecca, we do like one day of math, one day of reading. And so I have to be a little bit more intense with her. Where in the school year, you know, we would go all day, do group work, do this and that. And I will do Bible with them some in the summer, especially like today. I was like, I think we need to do some Bible lessons because I felt my focus is not where it's supposed to be. So This year's a little bit harder because normally I'd be like, hey, let's finish up homeschool and go swimming. Well,
Right, yeah.
it's a little bit not happening that, the extracurricular stuff is not happening as much this year as it has in the past. Yeah, I made a list and I haven't been as good about it, but having them do chores and do free reading, doing play at least one game a week to get them, because some of them are like, yay, electronics. And I'm like, no. I mean, it's
Right, yeah.
okay, but we tend to go, oh, it's summer, give them a break. And I'm all about breaks because I think they all need them. But what I find is if in the beginning, I didn't do that the first couple of years, and I paid for it in the fall because starting back, it was like we'd been off for 3 months, and there was a lot more crying and frustration. Also, the other thing I do in the fall when we do start back is when we do grammar, we start out with Mad Libs every year, and we have fun in the beginning. And I only add a few subjects each week until we get all of them in. Like we'll start on history and math. And then the next week we might add spelling. So, because here's the secret, when I was a public school teacher, you didn't start everything the first week. We got to build in and do things. And I was doing that at home. And I was like, why am I doing this to myself? I mean, you spend the first week learning all the procedures and go in the bathroom and do all that stuff. And I'm like, I need to add some of those buffers into my day. So we're like, oh, we're done for the day. And then it makes it a little bit easier to come back the next day. And we're going
That's
to
a
start off with
good
the
advice.
Alamo this year. And we're going to watch a movie the first week. And so just kind of easing back into
Easing
things
it.
helps.
Right. Yeah, I found the same thing. Kids just get overwhelmed if you change the schedule too abruptly. And you had said at the beginning too, your kids thrive on a schedule, but there's a point where a schedule can be way too much
Overwhelming.
if we overwhelming, especially if we change it too quickly. And so yeah, just having, I know you do a lot with like visual schedules. We had a I painted a chalkboard in my kitchen. It was like floor to ceiling. We just wrote everything on that, and everybody that was like the gathering place in the house anyways. But what are some visuals that you've used that have really helped with teaching?
The kids have a clipboard and they have everything on there so they visually can see like what they have for the week. A lot of times I'll post up things in our class. I have a classroom in the back of my house and I'll post up, okay, these are the things that we're going to do. You're just giving them those schedules now that. And then Rebecca's is a little bit more of a picture schedule so she can see, okay, we're going to do math, we're going to do reading, but they know what to expect. And these are the things they have to do. So my daughter got to the point where she's like, can I do all my math on Monday and then do all my math reading on Tuesday? I'm like, I really don't care. This is what I expect for you to get done for the week. So if math on Monday makes you happy, then math on Monday it will be.
That's
And
awesome.
so, of course, when the math starts getting a little harder, she's like, I think I might just need to do one day at a time. I'm like, I'm fine with that.
Well, let's send, I mean, you want to work your kids to be independent learners, and so they need to be able to have that flexibility so that when they get to those middle school teen years, high school years, they can take full reins on all of that. So it's good
Exactly.
practice.
And somebody gave me the advice that if you wake up in the morning and you see that your day is not going to go the way it's supposed to, and you're having a rough time, just still be in charge and be like, you know what? we're going to take a day off and not let the behaviors dictate it, but you still be in charge. So that's kind of how their clipboard works, is they still have the choice there, and they still have some power there. So it kind of empowers them to look at their week. Right. And who doesn't want that? I mean, we all want, especially when they're 11 and 13 and they're trying to figure out, okay, I'm trying to be a little bit more independent, but then I still need my mom, you know, trying to forge all that.
Right.
Giving them some choices is a big deal.
It really is. Yeah. Yeah. I was talking to a mom yesterday, and she was saying how just what we want them to fail in our homes, because we don't want them to be so under rule in at home and at school, or where, you know, wherever they are, to the point where when they leave our home, that's the first time they've been able to make a choice, and that they will fail.
Exactly.
Because we fail when we first try things. That's just natural, that, you know, we have to learn. So yeah, giving them that flexibility and the ability to try, see if it works. And if math in one day works for that student, good. So
yeah. And what better place for them to figure out, you know, kids learn where they're frustrated, kids learn where they need more support and where they don't want it. And I remember junior high was such a hard time when going through all those emotions and everything, and being at home and allowing them to be able to go through that, but in a safe place. I guess that's near and dear to my heart because I'm going through that right now. I would rather them feel like they can explode with me, and we say we're sorry to each other and learn how we're all going to make mistakes. We're going to make bad choices, but that means we still love each other, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And being able to do that in the confines of your home with your child is huge in my book.
Whether your child struggles or not, those teenage years are, if you can get through the middle school years, the high school years actually are delightful.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yes, for those young men, though, I mean, they want their independence. They're, you are mom, and that makes, and so outsourcing, we've talked about that with other guests, that it's just something that you just have to do because they need that space. It's good they come back, though. That's, have to tell you that. It's encouraging. But yeah. So as we're wrapping up our time, is there anything else you want to share that's been on your heart, just about your story, or just, you know, what you've learned, advice you've gotten from other homeschoolers that have just really made an impact on you?
There's two things I like to share. Number one, I had a very wise mama tell me, being a homeschool mom is like being an octopus, and you need to be flexible and be able to contort yourself in all different types of ways and places. And because there's so many things that will not go the way you want it to go.
Yes.
And I have really had to learn that. I'm not 100% there yet. Sometimes I'm like, oh, but I wanted to get done through this, and I've had to say, but it's okay.
Yeah.
So being flexible is huge. The second thing I want to encourage people is, as they're looking at homeschooling and they saw what happened from March to May or June, that is not homeschooling. That was crisis learning. And even our homeschooling was affected. We were not able to go out to co-ops. We were not able to go do the field trips and the things that we wanted to do. We weren't able to go see our friends. And, you know, homeschooling, a big part of our homeschool happens at home because we need that structure.
Right.
But we do get out and we do hands-on things, and we go to co-op and meet with other families. And so if you are going to decide to homeschool and you think, well, man, that's hard to stay home all the time, that's not what the majority of homeschooling families do. So I would encourage you to, you know, we don't know if co-ops are going to meet. We don't know right now. There's so many things that are up in the air.
Exactly.
But find another couple family and, you know, do science experience together. My friends and I are talking about putting our girls together to do a book club, just so that we have some kind of outside of our home during this time, you know, so finding those ways. So if you think I couldn't do homeschooling because that distance learning stuff was very frustrating, that's not really homeschooling because you weren't in control of what your child was learning. You didn't have the ability to say, hey, this is not working, let's change this up. So I just encourage you to, you know, to think about that. I saw a lot of people go, I can't homeschool my kids. I don't have the patience with them, but you have the patience with them every day.
Yeah.
And you're fine.
Yeah. It's different than in K-12, unfortunately, a lot of parents will say, call that homeschooling, but that's really the school district in your home, which is what you were doing in crisis schooling. If you really want to homeschool, it means you as a parent are in charge and the school is out. You've cut ties.
Yeah.
That's a good distinction to make, that there's a very big difference. And I know for many people, even with kids who didn't struggle, the K-12 program has been so stringent they could not keep up with it. And it's very hard to withdraw from that program as well. I do want to give you a huge warning. It requires a lot of complicated back and forth. I've helped a couple parents through that. So, that's really good advice. It's very different. But I love what you said about finding one or two families, because you can gather in small groups if you know people have been safe. Those are the types of environments that, even if there are restrictions on large groups, I mean, having a child on the autism spectrum, that's all that we had. We couldn't do co-ops when my sons were younger. We had two other families we got together with. And so that may be the co-op of at least the near future is that. And you know what? We had mom time. I was able to get refreshed at the same time that my kids had, you know, their friend time too. So,
And that is a big part, is community. Community is so important, whether finding people that are like-minded, who will encourage you, who will accept your child for who they are, too, is huge.
Yeah.
My daughter has grown so much, but the friends that we have watched her blossom, and they just tell me all the time how much she's improved, and that's such a blessing to me, because, you know, they could have thought, well, she's, you know, And not wanted to be around her because she was very clingy to me in the beginning. And now she's like, okay, bye. And that's what you want, it because she feels comfortable because we've been in this community for so long. Mm-hmm. So finding people that will support your journey, support you, speak truth to you, speak love to you, all those things are important.
Yeah, they truly are. And like we were talking about at the very beginning, people that can be real and just show you both sides, that yes, we have successes, but yes, we have struggles. And that's great. Well, thank you so much, Dawn. This has been such a good discussion. I hope our community has enjoyed your story and just the perspectives that you've shared. It's so refreshing that I hope those that are kind of sitting on the fence can now see, you know, just the differences of these environments and just the freedom that you have found in being able to homeschool and teach your kids at their pace. That's great. So thanks for your time. I appreciate it. And
thanks for having me. And I appreciate being a part of this community and helping others be able to gain the confidence that they can do this.
Yeah, definitely. And like I said, Dawn is on the SPED homeschool team. She is our teaching manager. She organizes all of our blogs that come out on a monthly basis and helps with that. And so, and also she writes a lot of blogs. So you can search just her name on our website and find a lot of good material that she's written. So definitely do that. But so thanks for joining us this week. And we also want to thank Knotgrass History for sponsoring this episode of SPED Homeschool Conversations. They, just like you, support SPED Homeschool with giving. And we are a 501c3, and you can donate on our website and continue to support the work that we do to, like I said at the very beginning, to make homeschooling a more viable choice for families who have children with special educational needs. That is our goal. And so we talked about, this is SPED Homeschool Awareness Month in July, and so next week we have another member from our community. Her name is Nae Chase Phelps, and she is going to talk about embracing the homeschool inclusion tornado in your home. And she's going to talk a little bit about her story and just what that tornado looks like on a regular basis, and just for all of her different levels of learners. And it, she said, it's crazy. I have to quote her. She said, you know, it's a crazy thing, but it works. So she's going to share her story next week. But we hope you can join us if you are watching live. We're headed now to our Mom's Night Out, and you can find that link in our support groups and our tribes. So it's every Tuesday night from 9 to 10. So thanks for joining us this week. Thank you again, Knotgrass History, and thank you all. We'll see you next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.